Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I'm Kate Spencer.
And I'm Dori Shafrir.
And we are not experts.
No, we are not. But we are two friends who like to talk a lot about serums.
We are.
Wow.
As I've mentioned, I know. Sorry, I took it a little too far.
No, it's never too far.
But I was going to say, as I've mentioned previously, I've come around and like now my skincare routine is like 20 steps.
Whoa.
Quarantine has really done a number on me.
Whoa.
Yeah. I now like at night, I've got all sorts of things going on back on my face. Yeah, I've really come around.
Wait, before we get into that,
anyway,
let's remind people that yes, we have a voicemail where you can leave us messages. You can also text us on this number. And Kate Spencer loves a text.
I do. They're so casual and intimate. I just got a few like while I was making dinner and I was like, hey, Kate, it's me. I'm the one with like, how are you feeling about school? It's great. I love it. Text us. I get them. Text us.
That number is 781-591-0390. We also still accept emails at forever35podcast@gmail.com. So if you want to shoot us an email, we would love one.
Yes. And there's a lot of action going on our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/forever35podcast. And there's just a slew of spinoffs for you to dabble in,
including our newest spinoff, which is Forever 35 Elections and Voting.
Oh, that is awesome.
I joined, which was established after we did the party, the letter writing party with Vote Forward. People were fired up and they were like, let's do a Facebook group, which is amazing.
We had over 100 people Zoom.
It was so cool.
Writing letters to voters. It was so cool.
I had the best time. I'm so glad we did it. It was really fun to see everyone. There were people who have already written like over 100 letters and there were people who had never done it before. So it was just very, very cool.
It was so cool.
Thank you.
And we so appreciate your reviews on Apple Podcasts. We love when you tell friends about the show or mention us on social media. We thank you for all of it.
We do. And a reminder that anything we mention on the show is always on our website, forever35podcast.com. Just click on over to the episodes tab. And you could follow us on Instagram at forever35podcast and on Twitter at forever35pod, although we are not very active on Twitter. Full disclosure.
Nope. Kind of. Yeah. We're really just kicking on the gram.
On the gram. Yep. Yep.
On the gram. Well, that was fun to get out of the way. I like saying all those things.
You know, speaking of reviews, a really like lovely thing happened over the last couple days, which was I was feeling a little bummed about some of the 1-star reviews we had received recently, complaining that we've gotten like, quote unquote, too political. I was just like, you know what? This really sucks. I was like sad about it. And I posted in my Instagram story that we'd gotten these 1-star reviews and like, hey, you know, if you still like the show. Oh, and so the reviews were like, I used to like this show, but it's gotten like too political, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, so I said, if you still like the show, like we'd really appreciate a review. And Kate, I want to say
a story.
Hundreds. I mean, like
that's
so
bonkers.
Many people left amazing reviews. I was so touched, so overwhelmed. It was like, I'm about to cry. It was really, I know, I can tell. It was just like so nice. It was so nice.
That is really, really kind. That's really, yeah. Well, I texted you too, because I saw you had posted that on Instagram. And then I think I wrote you today or yesterday. I was like, has anyone written a review? Like, I thought maybe like two people would do it.
Well, because there's a delay.
I don't know.
There's like a short delay. Like when you write your review, it doesn't go up immediately. So I think they just want to make sure that like you're not a spammer. But then when I checked tonight, I was like, oh my God. it was really genuinely so cool. And like so many people messaged me just to say like, hey, we've got your back. And like that just felt really good. So thank you, listeners.
That's really kind. Thank you very much.
It was so kind.
We truly, really appreciate it. Well, Apple reviews are genuinely important in helping people find out about our show. And look, I totally support people's freedom in writing whatever kind of review they want, but that doesn't mean that I don't look at all the one-star ones and the one that once called us adult or dolts.
No, totally. They are allowed to write those reviews, and I'm also allowed to get sad about it. Like,
that is true, Dory.
Both those things can happen.
That is
and
true.
I try not to let reviews get to me, but I think I was just feeling kind of bummed about it. But this was just a good reminder that like those people do not represent the vast, 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 vast majority of our listeners. And that was proven in spades. So thank you all again so much. So much.
That's so cool. We really, truly appreciate it so much.
We do.
So thank you. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. We love you. How are you doing?
Dory, I cried for 36 hours this weekend.
Oh my God.
Like at least. I started crying Friday afternoon and I didn't stop till like maybe Sunday morning.
When you say you didn't stop.
I had a huge cry.
Like you just were like continuously crying?
Okay, so let me set the scene.
Okay.
I got some personal news on Friday that launched me into a massive cry. And I haven't cried. I haven't had a big cry. Like I've sniffled or choked up or kind of cried a little at certain things in the past, let's say 6 to 8 months. I haven't had the like, you know, the cry, like the wailing.
Yes.
The like everything's
yes.
like
the
liquids coming
cry.
Out of everywhere.
Yes.
Yeah. Like I had to go like cry in my husband's lap and I like couldn't. It was just a whole thing. And once I started, I couldn't stop. And then I kind of just kept crying about it. Was crying about the original thing, but then I started just kind of crying about everything. Then John Lewis died, and I cried about that. And I cried. I was so sad that he died, and I was also feeling very, very angry because he died of pancreatic cancer, which is what my mom died of. So I always feel like extra angry for when people die of it because it's such a unjust and horrible way to die. So then I was crying about that. I just kept going. I couldn't stop. And then of course, like immediately when the crying finished, I got my period. It was like,
oh,
it was like comical how like it was, but it got me, thinking, and I actually posted in the Forever 35 Facebook group about like, how do you take care of yourself when you cry? Like, what is your cry self-care practices?
Yeah.
Because I wear contact lenses and I've worn them since I was 13. And I know the second I cry, even like at a movie, I have to like, my contacts become basically like worthless. Mm-hmm. So the second I start crying, I take out my contact lenses, but I couldn't wear contacts for 2 days because my eyes were dry from crying. Yes. And like I was icing my face.
Aww.
It was hydrating. Like I went into like survivalist self-care crying mode. Like after day one, I like made sure to drink an entire 32 ounce water bottle full of Liquid IV. You remember our old friend and former sponsor, Liquid IV?
Yes.
I was like, I know I'm gonna be dehydrated. I need to really hydrate. So I drank Liquid IV. I was like doing eye drops.
Oh my God.
I was ice rolling. I was doing all of it, but I still felt like crying. It took me like a couple days to kind of get back to my like more balanced feeling. I don't know. So I was curious, like, do you have stuff you do to take care of yourself when you have a big cry? Like, does a big cry physically and emotionally affect you the way it does me?
Well, I don't think I've ever had a 36-hour cry.
Well, I should say, after kind of the first day, like the first day of on and off crying, it was more just that I kept kind of crying at the drop of a hat. Like, yes, something would happen, yes, or yes, I would yes, think yes. of something and I would start to. So it wasn't straight. I was still like functioning in front of my family, kind
sure.
of.
Sure. I mean, definitely an ice roller is like key. Like, you got to have the ice roller because your face is like all puffy and you just want to like relieve yourself. I don't know.
So swollen.
Yeah, that sucks. I try to just like be kind to myself. I do find lately that I will get like, I will start crying from like a TV show. Like, I feel like I cry more at TV shows. I almost started crying the other day because I was listening to the Criminal podcast, and they aired an episode of the podcast Ear Hustle, which is the podcast that is broadcast from San Quentin. And it was about people keeping pets in jail, in prison. And I teared up in the car. Like, I just feel like I'm very susceptible to emotion these days.
That makes sense. I feel that way too.
I remember the last cry I had where I was like, I can't stop crying. Like, sometimes you're just like, I cannot stop crying. Like, tears just like yes. I wasn't like hyperventilating, but like tears were just like running down my face. It was when I watched Never Have I Ever. And I think I talked about this on Here For You.
Wait, what?
Hold yes. On.
Never Have I Ever, the TV show. That's right. Mindy Kaling's
yes,
show.
Yes, the Mindy Kaling show.
That's right. Something about it made you cry.
Yes. I don't want to like give a spoiler, but the season finale made me cry like a lot. It was very emotional.
When I was in high school and I saw Titanic, I cried for like 2 to 3 weeks after on and off about it. Which is not cool.
Far.
Story. No, I will literally start crying. Anyway, self-care for crying. I would love suggestions.
Yeah.
Or just like how you take care of yourself and get rest and kind of nurture the tears, but also like, you know, hydrate your eyes and your face.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, I'm glad you're feeling better.
Thank you. Thank you very much. How have you been? I'm very excited. You're like, first of all, you're becoming like a pop culture podcaster.
I so am not.
Yes, you are.
What are you talking about?
You have more pop culture recs this week. Like, I feel like you're really consuming pop culture in a way.
Because I have nothing else going on in my life. Like, literally nothing. Nothing happens. Oh my God, I'm gonna cry again. Oh, and like, yes, I could just like prattle on about Henry, but like that's like boring. So the only other things that I'm doing are like pop culture things and playing Animal Crossing. Like that is what I'm doing. Like, besides work, which like who wants to hear about work? Henry, and then pop culture. Like, that's it. That's my life.
Well, I still admire it because I'm not. So tell us, you've got more recs for us.
Well, you know,
week,
it's
so.
Funny. Yeah, I definitely went through a phase where like I couldn't focus on TV or books. And I feel like I'm getting back into both. This past week, I watched some really good reality TV that I want to talk about. I am about halfway through the new show Indian Matchmaking on Netflix. And I actually saw my fertility doctor this morning. She was like, "How was your weekend?" And I was like, "Oh, you know, it was fine." I was like, "I guess the only thing I did was watch Indian Matchmaking." She was like, "I watched the whole thing." And then we had a whole discussion about it. So that was fun.
I need to watch this. Okay.
It's like it's the perfect combination of like surprisingly deep and like thought provoking, but also light. You know,
oh, that's perfect.
Yes, I'm really enjoying it because, you know, I was thinking about this. The last Matchmaker that I remember watching on TV was the Millionaire Matchmaker, who,
yes, I remember her,
is not like a nice person. And that I eventually found that show very hard to watch. It felt like she, I don't know, I don't want to go into the Millionaire Matchmaker, but you know, so that's kind of the last time I've watched a Matchmaker on TV. And this woman is like the polar opposite of the Millionaire Matchmaker. She's really thoughtful and kind, and like it's just really a great show. I'm really enjoying it. It's 8 episodes. It's on Netflix. Then also, so my sister the other day was like, I really wish you watched Million Dollar Listing so we could talk about it. And I was like, you know, I used to watch that show. That used to be one of the shows I watched, but like years ago. Like I haven't watched that show in at least 5 years, if not longer. And then I was like, I don't even know if I get it anymore. Like, we just have YouTube TV. We don't have regular TV. I was like, let me just see. But we do. We have Bravo On Demand on YouTube TV. So I was like, all right, I'll just settle in to watch a recent episode of Million Dollar Listing so I can text about it with my sister. And you know what? It was like seeing old friends that you haven't seen in a long time.
Like, you notice their changes.
Oh my God, yes, because they've all changed so much because they're all so freaking rich now.
Oh, really?
Yes. I mean, they were rich before, but like now they are like, it's insane. One of them in particular has just become like the apotheosis of himself. Like, he is just a ridiculous human in a way that like I enjoy. And it's mostly the same people on the show, which I feel like is kind of rare for a reality show. There is a new woman. She's been on the show for like 3 seasons. She's new to me. But yeah, it was like, oh yeah, I remember. Yeah, okay. Like, I got right back into it. So that was like another good escape. And I was
kind of like, you're seeing old friends during quarantine.
That's what I just said. Like, it did. It felt like,
yeah,
oh, I'm checking in with these people that I haven't seen in years. But it's just like old times. It's like no time passed.
Oh my God.
You know those friends? Those are Million Dollar Listing agents for me.
Keep going.
I didn't know that it would be these people for me, but once I got started, I was like, this is like coming home. And I was a little apprehensive that like watching a show about expensive real estate might be upsetting in a way, but it's like, the real estate is so expensive and so ridiculous that it's not even something where I'm like, oh, I'm jealous of that person, because it's like, this house costs
right
$20 million. So,
oh my God.
Yeah. So anyway, and then I saw, you know, the writer Amanda Mull, who writes for The Atlantic.
Yes.
She tweeted today that she has just gone back to watching Below Deck and Shaws of Sunset. And she had like a similar reaction to how I returned to Million Dollar Listing. And I think that this is like a thing, like people returning to like comfort reality shows, because these shows have now been going on for like 10, 12, 15 seasons. Like, they've been going forever. And so it's nice to just like jump right back in and again, like feel like no time has passed. I'm considering doing this with Real Housewives, because I stopped watching Housewives like 8 years ago. And I'm like, maybe I should
I've been
get
tempted
back into
for
Housewives.
For Real Housewives too.
Right?
Beverly Hills specifically, right?
No.
Or New York.
So my fave Housewives were OC. I was an OC OG.
Oh, I watched early OC too.
Atlanta. And
Atlanta's good.
New Jersey. I liked New York.
Ooh.
I liked New York, but I really liked New Jersey.
This is fascinating. This is like not a side of you that I know very well.
The reality television.
The reality TV set. Yeah.
Because it's like it's been
in recent years, it's not been your thing.
Exactly. It's been dormant for a while, but quarantine is just really bringing it out of me.
Have you ever watched Married at First Sight?
Because
Anthony and I watched that the other night. It is wild. You should check. That is fascinating. I don't know if it's relaxing, though.
See, but that's a show that I never watched. So I feel like
I've never seen it either.
I have no context for it. I'd be like jumping in new, you know?
Yeah, you don't want new friends. No new friends right now.
I don't need new friends right now. I need old friends. I need comforting friends.
Okay.
I want to know what I want to know what Vicky Gumbelson is up to. You know what I'm saying?
Vicky's not on the OC anymore.
Okay, see, I don't even know that.
I watched the other night after my like first or second night of crying, I watched Golden Girls on Hulu. I started with the pilot and then I watched like two other episodes. It was so comforting. This was an activity suggestion that we suggested during Here For You. And yes. I like in my brain, I was like, I'm going to watch Golden Girls. And I finally did it. Dory, it was like being wrapped in a warm blanket Ooh. With PG-13 jokes. It was yes. so freaking great. I'm going to go back to it. And also, like, they're such amazing women. Like, just seeing these four older women on TV. Well.
Wow.
Stay tuned for more pop culture coverage. Well, speaking of friendships.
Yes. Did you like my segue? I loved your segue. Go on.
I mean, look. The women we get to interview on this episode are beyond any housewife of any franchise, because we're talking to Amina Toussaint and Anne Friedman, the hosts the Call Your Girlfriend podcast and the authors of the most delightful, speaking of like heartwarming and cozy, but also like thought-provoking book, Big Friendship.
Yes. So good.
And it was a real freaking treat. And we got to do it over Zoom, so we all saw each other, which was...
Yes, we got to do it over Zoom because we had technical difficulties with the app that we normally use to record. But it turned out to be great.
We had an unexpected Zoom.
Yes, it was so fun. Such a joy to talk to both of them. Their book is delightful. Please buy their book. So we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we will be talking to Anne and Amina.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I think it's safe to say that we have suffered through bras. We've been uncomfortable in them. We've devoted whole episodes to finding good ones. But I'm here to say enough is enough. Enough. Enough.
I mean, drawn the line. Dory, have I ever told you what I did in college when I needed a bra to wear with a fancy dress?
What?
I cut the top of pantyhose and then I duct taped that to my chest.
Oh. That sounds uncomfortable.
Because I didn't have honey love when I was in college.
No. Well, we are here to say no more being uncomfortable.
No.
With Honey Love's bras, you will wonder why it took so long to make something so comfortable and so supportive. There's no underwire, but through some kind of wonderful magic, they managed to not sacrifice lift, all while making it in a fabric that's so comfortable, you barely know it's there, especially the crossover bra. I wear one of these almost every day. I'm wearing one right now because it's so comfortable and it easily fits into my life. But if you like a breathable and versatile legging, Honeylove has you covered on that front too. Plus, they have tanks, shapewear, and their V-bra that has molded cups, still without the underwire, to keep you from getting that dreaded uniboob effect other more relaxed bras tend to give you. So treat yourself to the best bras and shapewear on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com/forever. Use our exclusive link to get 20% off, honeylove.com/forever. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support our show and tell them we send you. Treat yourself to Honeylove because you deserve it.
You know, Dory, we talk to a lot of really fantastic, intelligent people on this podcast. But I don't know, maybe you're like us and you want to go even deeper.
I'd love to go deeper.
We like to go deep. And that's not only possible with today's sponsor, but also easy to accomplish on Masterclass. Every year I get really into the classes offered and the instructors offering them. Like, I'm all over the place with the things that I like on Masterclass, but this year I am very interested in the class Redefining Feminism, which is 14 lessons from Gloria Steinem.
Okay.
Now, they dissect issues women face in the US and ways we can play a role in the feminist movement in our everyday lives. Look, I majored in women and gender studies in college. So this is right up my alley. But even if you didn't, even if you're like, this is the first time I'm hearing those words.
I would argue, especially if you didn't.
Yes. Get into it with Masterclass, because this is the year you can really learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Go from just talking about improving to actually doing the things you've been wanting to do with Masterclass. And it doesn't have to be Redefining Feminism with Gloria Steinem. It can be gardening in your own garden or your yard or patio. It can be learning to cook Indian food or designing a space that you love. Masterclass offers over 180 world-class instructors. So whether you want to master like negotiation with Chris Voss, or think like a boss with Martha Stewart, or maybe capture your vision through photography with Petra Collins, Masterclass has you covered. With Masterclass, you get unlimited access to intimate one-on-one classes with the world's best. And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/F35. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/F35. That's masterclass.com/F35. You know, one thing I think is really kind of interesting about skin, my skin, but all skin, is that like what it needs now in my 40s is not what I needed in my 30s.
Totally.
Definitely not what I needed in my 20s. But like, how are you supposed to know what your skin needs?
It's hard. It's hard to know.
Especially when there's just like so many products out there. The overwhelm is real. It's a struggle to even know how to get the results you want, what products to start with. This is why we're super excited to partner with Apostrophe. Apostrophe is a prescription skincare company that offers science-backed medications that are clinically proven to help. I have used Apostrophe. I love it. They will pair you with a board-certified dermatologist who literally creates a personalized treatment plan for your skin. I have done this a few times now. It is so easy to do their online consultation. You upload photos. And like within a few weeks, I had done the consultation and received my treatment plan and my product.
Amazing.
And that is how I became a tretinoin gal. I love the tretinoin that they sent me. I love their sunscreen. Both products have been amazing on my skin. And you, Forever 35 listeners, can get a special deal from Apostrophe. You can get your first visit for only $5. That's at apostrophe.com/forever35 when you use our code forever35. Now, that is a savings of $15. I like that. This code is only available to Forever 35 listeners. So to get started, just go to apostrophe.com/forever35 and click get started. And then use our code forever35 at sign up and you will get your first visit for only $5. Thank you, Apostrophe, for sponsoring this episode. We are very, very, very excited about our guest on today's episode. We have Amina Toussaint and Anne Friedman, podcast hosts, authors, and most importantly, friends. Let me give you their bios just before we get started. Amina Toussaint is a writer, interviewer, and cultural commentator. She is a frequent public speaker whose talks and interviews lead to candid conversations about ambition, money, and power. Aminatou lives in Brooklyn. And Anne Friedman is a journalist, essayist, and media entrepreneur. She's a contributing editor to The Gentlewoman, and every Friday she sends out her very popular, wonderful email newsletter. Anne lives in Los Angeles, and together they host the long-running, absolutely incredible podcast Call Your Girlfriend, and Big Friendship is their first book. And as I am reading this, I have chills, which doesn't always happen to me, or maybe never happens to me when I'm reading bios of guests, but we're just so happy that you both are here. And
yeah,
I'm so thrilled to get to talk to you about this book.
Thank you.
Love coming on shows that I listen to, like, truly.
as you already know, we are big Forever 35 fans, so it's really a pleasure to be here.
Day one fans, very mutual. Yeah.
Day one, ride or dies.
In fact, I think that, speaking of Big Friendship, I think Kate and my, like, first real friend date was to a Call Your Girlfriend show.
It was. Whoa! At the Ace Hotel in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So I'm getting chills.
Remember podcast shows?
Ooh, yeah.
Remember shows?
And it was kind of like, you know, it's funny reading your book and thinking about my friendship with Kate and what you guys are talking about, like stretching and kind of reaching out to people. And I remember asking Kate if she wanted to go to this show and being like, so, you know, that there's that cool podcast, Call Your Girlfriend, and they're doing a live show. And I was just wondering, like, would you maybe want to go? Like, it was definitely like a, like, I knew Kate, but we hadn't taken our friendship to that level yet. So
sat next to each other intimately in a theater.
Yes. So thank you for doing that for us.
I love hearing that.
An honor and a pleasure, really.
Yes. Well, we both really loved your book and feel like it's going to mean so much to so many of our listeners. We get, and I'm sure you do too. I mean, I think you mentioned this in your book, that you get so many questions about friendship. And I guess what I would love to start with is, how would you two define a big friendship versus just a regular old friendship?
Mm. Versus a Facebook friend or whatever other designation we might have.
It's funny even hearing you ask that, because the answer is right there, is that the word friend is so nebulous. You know, it's like, friend is someone that you've known since you were three and you're like, moms went to Weight Watchers together. Or I'm talking about a very specific friend in my life. Or, you know, like someone that you kind of maybe took one class in college with and then now you live in the same city. Or it can be people who have these, like, very deep, like, ties with you, like Anne is. It's such a weird relationship to define. And so much of what is hard about friendship is that the definition is unclear sometimes. And so we came up with this term big friendship because we wanted to talk about the kind of relationship that we have, which is a very deep-rooted friendship, a friendship that is rooted in the future, a friendship that has an expectation that you are constantly going to be investing in each other, and also that you want to be together for a long time. There's a reason that the subtitle is How We Keep Each Other Close. We didn't write a book about how to make friends, which is something that is, frankly, like, you know, something that someone should really write about, because it is hard to make friends and it's not something that we should take for granted. And we were really interested in puzzling through all of the ups and downs of our friendship. And I'm sure that you both know this because you are two people who host a podcast. There's the public story of your relationship. Like, people think that they know you and they think that they know all of the stuff about your friendship. And really all they know is the stuff that you say on the microphone. And then there is also the reality of, here is who we are when the microphones are off. And for Anne and I, we're two people who care really deeply about each other, and we would like to be in each other's lives for a really, really long time. And what we lose by not talking about the complication and the nuance of friendship is that it basically leaves you feeling that if you're feeling kind of weird or gross about something in your friendships, that there's something wrong with you, and not that it's a completely normal experience to be having. Actually, if you are in intimate relationships with people of any kind, it's going to get weird and gross sometimes. And so Big Friendship, the term, like, really tries to address that. It's like, we want to be in each other's lives for a really long time. And that is the tier of friendship expectation that we have for each other. And, giving labels and words to things that we feel really deeply is really important for that.
Yeah, it was so validating and to read your book, because it's just interesting to me, and I think to Dory too, how romantic relationships often in conversation, we make room for there to be complexities, whereas friendships are just assumed to be easy and, quote, natural and requiring no work. And that to me is the one big underlying message of your story that you share, as well as your larger philosophies about these kinds of relationships, is that they require constant coming back to doing the work to having a healthy friendship.
Yeah, work is a key word. I mean, I think, you know, one of the aspects of the definition is that a big friendship is active. It's not just a thing that you kind of feel in your heart of hearts, but, like, don't ever practice or act on or try to live with the other person in a day-to-day kind of way. So we were really interested in this question of, like, in adulthood, not in, like, our teen years or not in an era when maybe friendship is considered more central, but, like, now as fully, 35 and up adults, how do we continue to put in the work, and how do we normalize putting in the work in friendship? Because one thing that I think comes up a lot is overwhelm, right? Like, family is overwhelming and work is overwhelming, and trying to keep up with your own personal health and wellness can also be overwhelming. And so how are you supposed to make time for friendship as well? And that's something that we really wanted to address head on, in terms of the expectation for where it falls on the priority list for busy adults.
Can you tell us a little bit about what writing this book together was like? Because it's really interesting. I don't think we've ever read a book written from the point of view of we, like, from a partnership. And so could you explain how you kind of came to that choice, and then how you did it together, especially as long distance besties?
Yeah, you know, I think that was one of the really first decisions that we made, is that we had to write this book as a we, because we were trying to arrive at these joint truths of and describe joint experiences that we have. We've read some really, really great, you know, like, novels about friendship. There's awesome books about what it's like to be a friend, or, you know, on what all these different ways. But we had just never read a book about, with two people jointly telling the truth about the friendship that they were in. And we were really interested in that. And I think that part of it, is that it's like we have to tell the same story, but we also have to tell the same story because it is, for our friendship, it is safer to tell that story together. You know, there's no world in which one of us is writing a tell-all about here's what it's like on this side of the podcast. Here's what it's like on this side of the Zencaster. And so
chaotic.
And so there was
when it's working.
Very, 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 very chaotic. And, you know, and I think that for us, it forced us to do this really deep emotional work of, okay, like, what are we saying together? Like, I know what I'm saying and I know what Anna's saying. What are we saying together? And so logistically, what was really fun about it is that it meant that we had to spend more in-person time together. And since we don't live in the same city, it meant, like, going on these kind of writing retreat style trips with each other and, you know, cook every single meal together, hang out all day, work. And truly the work wife of my dreams. Thank God it works for us.
Unimpeachable work ethics in this duo. Like, truly, truly, like, ready to put in 24 hours when we need to.
It's so true. I'm like, I've seen you from, like, the time you, like, put on your pajamas to the time you, like, take them off in the morning, and the work ethic is iconic. But anyway, enough about how much I love Anne Friedman. And back to the point of your question. So we live together. We outline together, really, which was a process that involved just talking it out to death of what is it that we were trying to say? And we would go into like our separate corners of the house and write, and then come back to read out loud to each other what we had written, which to me was always, I think I've said this already somewhere else, it was so fun because I love to read Anne Friedman. So that's just a gift. And then also to have this experience of, oh, you're trying to make a larger point with a friend or someone in your life, and you go separately to kind of think it out and then come back to share it, is always really illuminating, because sometimes the stories are the same. You know, we're like, okay, like we use the same like anecdote. And other times it's like, oh, I don't remember that. Or, oh, I remember this from a different perspective. And, you know, so the meta conversation of it was also very healing. And, you know, there's a world in which I'm like, wow, if you could do this exercise with every single person that you're in a relationship with, wow, amazing. I don't recommend it, though. It's so much work.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask about that. Like, what were some of the things that you found that you remembered differently?
I'm thinking about this. I mean, some of it was just arriving at a deeper conversation. So we would both remember, like, that was an awkward moment for maybe different reasons on both of our parts. But, like, the what was really going on there question was often something that we arrived at together based on, like, both having had to articulate, like, why something felt bad or weird to us. It is really just, like, one line in the book, but like one example is like when things were not great between us, we had plans to have dinner, and I brought what was then a new boyfriend for me because I was like, oh great, like, you know, important people in my life meeting each other, and I was just like, you know, that was my view, and Aminatu was like, oh, finally I'm gonna get some good one-on-one catch-up time with Anne, and was like, what is this guy doing here? You know, like, I'm broadly paraphrasing, but like, that's a situation that's like a good example of we were both trying to come at our disconnect by trying to connect. And it was like, it was just telling as like, you can have a shared intention. You can both remember that, like, that incident did not feel good to you for different reasons, but like, what were we each really trying to do there is the kind of question that came out more as a result of the writing process. And I would also say for me, a lot of these examples, or several of them in this book, have to do with things that were miscommunications between us where I didn't identify the like race dynamic at play, or I didn't understand an aspect of Aminatu's experience in real time as rooted in, you know, the pervasive racism in this world and in our friendship. And so there are also instances where I'm like, oh yeah, I definitely remember all the details of that conflict or that incident. Like, you know, if you wrote down, if you filmed them with a camera, they would look the same from, you know, both of our perspectives. But like, I was missing this huge piece of the puzzle. And so, you know, I really have to echo, you know, Aminatu's comment of like, hey, if you could do this with all of your friends, like, wow, what a world. And also, wow, what work? How much work?
Yeah. So let's talk about the descent, because that's a big part of the book. I mean, your book opens with you two at a spa weekend that, as you say, like, would have looked perfect from the outside, but inside you were both really struggling and your friendship was really struggling. And you also talk about going to couples therapy for your friendship, which I think is not something that most friends do, but it sounds like it was really beneficial for both of you. So I'd love for you to just tell our listeners kind of about the way that your friendship became strained and then how you work to repair it.
That's such a good question. You know, I think it's funny, even after all of these words and after all of the therapy and all of the talking about it, it feels so not dramatic And so just like, wow, all of life is just one big cliche. You know, it's just not dramatic, kind of petty, and very, and with the benefit of hindsight, everyone is like, well, I would have made different decisions.
Sure.
If I had the personal growth I have now, if I had that then, I would operate on a different level. But, you know, I think that for us, it was kind of inevitable. We just started missing each other in these very small ways. Like at first, just like very, very, very small ways. You know, someone does something that just, it feels weird and you just don't say anything in real time. And then it's not a big deal because you don't say anything and that's fine. But when, you know, when it starts to like accumulate and it's like, oh, there's like 10 of those or there's 15 of those or, you know, not that you're keeping track, but I keep using the word weird because for me, that's really how it felt. I was like, oh, something about this doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel like bad enough that I want to say something. You know, I'm not a shy person. I generally will, you know, when I'm not comfortable, I think I have a propensity to communicate that. But it was just this like very strange experience of, oh, this thing doesn't, something about it doesn't feel good. And why am I not able to say something about it in real time? And I think that is a really recognizable kind of emotion. And in some ways, it would have been so much easier if there was this huge dramatic thing to point to, like, oh, Anne, you fucked this one thing up, or you were so careless. You know, like, if there had been a thing, then we would be fighting. If there had been a thing, we would have been fighting about the thing, which in some ways is so much more productive. But there wasn't a thing. There was just this, very nebulous, like pit of the stomach feeling of we are not communicating about a couple of things. And and the question was always for me was, why am I not saying anything? And, you know, and this happened over a couple of years. And, you know, which means that the rot really just sets in because what you're doing is establishing a really unhealthy communication pattern and a really unhealthy dynamic between two people, even if it's not apparent to you. The dynamic is set now. And
especially if it's not apparent to you, I would say.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think like a thing that's also worth mentioning is that part of why you and I can be such good friends is that there are some things that we share very strongly, and this like inability to do feelings very well, or just, you know, like talk about your feelings in real time, you know. And at the beginning of our friendship, this was actually a really strong asset. Part of why I was drawn to Anne was that there were, you know, it felt easy, and I had found someone who processed feelings the exact same way that I did. So something that was a strength one time has now become a weakness because you're not growing at the same pace. And because we started missing each other in these really small ways. At first, it became really big ways because the chasm just opens up more and more and more. And we were just not talking to each other about the things that were really hard. And for us, that really came to a head when we started talking about work, because for as much as our friendship didn't feel great, work was going gangbusters. Like we are really, really, really good coworkers. I struggle to remember a time when our friendship was strained, where I felt that Anne was not a good colleague to me. And I think that that's so telling also. And part of the mind fuck is that it's like, oh, she shows up every day. She gives 110%. Could not be prouder of her. She's so good at work. I love this. And then why does the friendship feel weird? And so it's very telling that for us, the thing that prompted us to say, hey, this doesn't feel good, was a work conversation, because we're people who are, you know, we are very, we love to be self-expressed. And when we couldn't agree on doing this one work thing together, the question really wasn't like, why do you not want to work on this thing with me? It was, what's really going on here? And why are we not why do we not want to spend more time together? And it was like a huge point of catharsis, because, you know, it'd been like, I want to say like 2 or 3 years, Anne, right? Of just this underlying something is weird. And in saying that, you know, I think that sometimes part of why you don't want to know what's going on in your relationship is that you're afraid that they're going to tell you that it's wrong, and that it means that the whole thing is falling apart. And And I think that I had the opposite experience of the minute Anne said to me, oh, this feels awful, I don't feel good. I felt like that was the breakthrough, was, oh my God, like I am not in my head going like completely just mad thinking about this. It's like, oh, she is also experiencing this discomfort. And, you know, for the aforementioned reasons of we are not good at feelings, but we're very good at talking, we were able to talk through that.
Mm. And I just want to say
the
too,
next part of this.
Well, I just want to say I have a lot of compassion for our previous selves when we talk about this because, you know, and there's a reason why this conversation arose in the context of work is because work is a place where we had and continue to have an explicit agreement with each other that we're going to keep showing up to this work partnership. Like, you know, we are three-way work married in an LLC, right? Like we are, it's a lot to dissolve. And so it's in some ways safer in the context of work to say, this isn't working because you know, we're still bound together. And, that's something that like, you know, some of the experts we interviewed said, which is in a romantic relationship or particularly in like a marriage or family relationship, when it is really a lot harder to walk away or dissolve it, or you've made these explicit commitments that are like literally on paper, it is easier to say when things are feeling bad, because then you have some assurances that it's not going to, you know, make the whole thing tumble to the ground. And, you know, friendship, the vast majority of friendships don't have that assurance. And so it makes sense that it's a lot harder to say something about this is really not working, or like there is some rot in the basement that is spreading to other levels of the house. to use a weird home improvement metaphor that just came to me. And so I want to say
friendship as home improvement, the Carmen Maria Machado.
My God. Yes. In the friendship breakdown house, like 100%. But I just want to say that is like, I realize now, not just for personal failings of feelings, but because of the expectations around friendship, mm-hmm. because the definitions are missing. And I really now like have this perspective of like, because we have made some of these assurances to each other as friends, I feel really good about our ability in the future to talk about when things don't feel great, because we now have this, like, you know, I mean, it's not literally on paper, but we have more of a commitment that like we both want to stay here and work on each other's on the friendship.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think that that's how we ended up in couples therapy, which is and it feels very extravagant and weird. And, you know, it would be so much easier to share that story if you're like, oh, yeah, we're doing this weird, like a L.A. Brooklyn thing that weird L.A. Brooklyn people do. And instead, it was a huge I realize now, even as someone who has been in personal therapy for over a decade, I realize now how so much of that stigma operates. You know, there was a huge, like, we were not telling the people in our lives that we were at couples therapy because...
A select few, yeah.
Yeah, you know, because if you tell people that, the mind goes to like, oh yeah, these two have problems and it's not working, which, again, is very, very normal. But for us, because we were so comfortable with our working partnership, even when our friendship didn't feel the same, even when our friendship did not feel good, knowing that we were able to interview therapists, hire therapists, have a conversation around, okay, who's going to pay this time? Are we going to drive? Are we driving there? Are we taking an Uber there? Are we going together? Are we going separately?
Did you hydrate?
Did you hydrate? Like, have you eaten? I know that you're not going to be happy if we go to therapy on an empty stomach, so please eat so we don't have a full meltdown there. Being able to make those kinds of big logistical decisions in the background of, you know, not feeling completely safe and good with each other was also a huge assurance. Mm. And I think that for me, it just showed me that, oh, I don't quite understand. There is a breach of communication in our friendship, and I am not understanding what Anne wants or needs, but I am seeing Anne make this decision with me. And that counts for a lot. And, you know, and I think that it really for me was like shifting my mindset to it is, you have to give people the benefit of the doubt. Like, even if you do not understand the words that are coming out of their mouth, and those words are contradictory to every feeling that you have, giving your partners in life the benefit of the doubt that they intend to do the thing that they intend to do, and then watching them follow up on that, I think was a really powerful it was a really powerful experience for me because that is the courtesy that I want other people to have for me. And again, you know, it was just an assurance that, okay, we are literally financially investing in repairing this relationship. That has to mean something.
Ugh, that is amazing. I'm hearing you, just hearing you talk, your perspective on friendship is so, you are both speaking as people who are so clear on this commitment to each other and the work it takes. It's really moving. I wanted to ask about safety in a friendship, because this is something you talk about in the book, and we get a lot of questions on our podcast about toxic friendships and how to know if a friend is toxic and how to end a friendship or change a friendship. And so I was wondering, from your perspective, how do you determine if a friend offers safety to you in a relationship, and what do you suggest people do if that safety is betrayed?
We definitely interviewed some therapists for the book who had thoughts on this. You know, one thing that we heard again and again is to start by asking yourself some questions about the friendship and about not just this other person, because toxic friend sort of implies like that is a state of being associated with this other person. And if you frame it more like this is a toxic friendship, or like what is the dynamic between us that is happening? What are the questions you can ask to not so much like interrogate your role or assign blame, but like just to gain a little bit more perspective? Because presumably, you know, most people who, you know, I have maybe been tempted to apply that label to, have other healthy relationships in their lives, right? Like, you know, and that alone tells me that maybe this is a toxic dynamic between the two of us for any number of reasons, as opposed to this person is a toxic friend. So I think asking some questions, being able to look at your own patterns, like, you know, this is another thing we heard from therapists of, you know, do all of your friends seem to, friendships seem to break down in the same way? Do you experience, you know, toxic friends, you know, doing the same things, or do you have your, you find yourself having the same responses over and over? Those are some other things to ask about. And I don't think that, those therapists or we are saying there is no such thing as like a toxic friendship. But I do think that like reflecting on, times when our dynamic certainly was toxic, like for a while, or reflecting on, just the real life difficulties that happen between adults who are doing their best. It's pretty clear to me that like a lot of friendships that get written off as toxic are, you know, that's not the whole story, or it's not quite that simple. And so I don't know that I have like a definitive, here's a checklist. Is this a toxic friend? You know, it doesn't quite work like that. But yeah, like asking some questions from multiple angles on the situation seems to be a good starting point.
Right. I really love
asking.
Oh, sorry. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, also asking that person, you know, I think that I'm thinking to myself of every time I have labeled a person or a friendship toxic, it was very much a one-sided conversation, you know, and not knowing what that person's experience of being in the friendship is, I think is also very telling. And, you know, and I know that I was like, I am very much, have been a part of this dynamic. And every single time I look back and I was like, oh yeah, I never discussed that with them. I either made a unilateral decision or, you know, we both like kind of walked away in a way that was, you know, you give each other the slow fade out. But I think that again, if we're talking about relationships between adults, we should be able to like find a way to talk about that. Not saying that you have to save every friendship that you don't feel good about, but I do think that finding a way to, you know, in a non-threatening and healthy way, like ask this other person, how are they also feeling in the friendship? Because, the thing that I've learned is that it is very possible that someone else is telling the story about me and I am the toxic friend, you know? And that is, I think that, if you are in a toxic friendship, it's possible that both of you are the toxic friend. And that's something that's like really hard to understand and to know. And it makes sense when you think about the fact that we don't have so many hard, deep, and important conversations with the people that we're friends with about these kinds of dynamics.
Right. Like, is it toxicity or is it just a really hard conversation that you don't want to have?
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah, that section kind of along the same lines as you were saying, Amina, too. Like, I also had to kind of re-examine some of the assumptions I had made about some friendships in my life that I had labeled toxic. But because I had labeled the people toxic, I had not labeled the friendship toxic. And I think that's such a good reframing of how we think about these things. I also wanted to talk about how, if someone is, I know this is not a book about how to make friends, but it kind of is a book about how to it's a book about how to maintain big friendships. And I'm wondering if someone doesn't have a big friendship by the time they're, say, 30, is it too late for them?
I don't think so.
It's never too late.
Okay.
It's never too late. I know that we all, you know, we all read those articles about like how it's impossible to make friends after you're 30 or, you know, all, like, and we're all part of that conversation. And I, you know, I both want to say that for people like the four of us who are blessed with a lot of really like deep and good friendships in our lives, it's worth remembering that making friends is hard for a lot of people, you know, mm-hmm. and that that is not a personal failure. There are a lot of structural, deep emotional reasons why some people cannot or do not have friends. And I think that a lot of us just take the fact that we can make friends easily for granted, or that once in our lives we made friends and it means that these people have poured it over over and over. And it is true that, you know, the 30, the magic number of, okay, you kind of start to feel like an adult now. You like work is stressful. Maybe your family configuration is becoming stressful. Maybe you are having children. Maybe you are, you know, you're making these like very big decisions about life. And friendship is the easiest thing to fall by the wayside, because there is a societal expectation that, you know, family and children and work is more important than friendship, which is, I believe very deeply misguided, because friends can fill a lot of the emotional needs that we put on other relationships. And honestly, like, we pressure all of these other parts of our lives when your friends can actually step up to be the pressure release valve in a lot of these situations. But I don't think that it's too late. I think that, you know, it's a conversation that is like worth having over and over with yourself and with the people that you are in community with. I think that, you know, the part about friendship that's like very idealized and infantilized, that like, you know, the you're on the playground and you ask someone else, like, will you be my friend?
Right.
And we look at that with this like very rosy, romantic, you know, lens. And then we kind of dismiss it a little. I was like, that is a question that you can ask like every day that you are alive to another human being. And there is nothing shameful about it. There is nothing like small and infantilizing about it. And if anything, we should be asking people if they want to be our friend. Like, consent is beautiful and sexy. Mm. And friendship is a really important relationship. And for those of us who just have friends that we've fallen into, I think that it should actually force us to examine how, you know, just all of these hours of spending time with someone, does it really mean that you're friends with them? You know, like, it's like you have to do the work of labeling the thing. And so I am very bullish and very hopeful on the fact that you can make a friend for like every day that you are breathing oxygen on this planet. Sure, it gets harder and harder the older you are, because other life transitions and events like have this really prominent feeling. But I, you know, It's just so hard for me to accept the fact that we, like, as a society, we say, oh yeah, there's like an age where you're just like done. The people that you know are the people that you know. I'm like, that's just, it's simply not true. It's simply not true. It's like, if you get a new job in your 40s or your 50s, you are making new friends. You know, you're maybe not calling it that, but you have opportunities to meet people. And so this is a really rambling way of saying that, you know, the childishness and the wonder and the, like, everything good that we think about friendship with children is, like, we should really reclaim that imagination for our adult lives. And so many people feel this way, you know, like, if there is a listener out there who's like, oh yeah, this is not my experience, I guarantee you that there are two listeners. And if there are two listeners, there are hundreds of listeners. Like, this is not a, this is not an isolated, you know, like, one person is broken and they don't know how to do things. So much of this problem is a lack of definition. It is a lack of establishing norms, and it's a lack of empowering people to ask for the bonds that they want of people in their lives.
Mm. And being proactive in other ways too. You know, I think that, like, our book is not exclusively about friendships between women, but, like, you know, there is something about, the assumed passivity sometimes that people socialized as women have, which is, if someone isn't reaching out to me, then they don't really want to be friends. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one thing that we feel very strongly about, not just saying that, like, I want to be friends, but being the one who actually follows up. Or, you know, we also describe this pit of the stomach feeling that we both had when we met each other that, you know, I think most people can relate to that, like, ooh, what's happening here? Like, you know, Dory, whatever made you want to ask Kate to go see the live podcast show, you know, that sense of an ineffable connection, where you're just excited about this person, you know, recognizing that, you might have to, you know, undertake some personal emotional risk to name that feeling, to say you want to be friends, and then to be really clear, like, oh, do you want to sign up for this class with me so that we see each other every week? Or, you know, do you want to go for a walk together, you know, on this day in a recurring way? Like, you know, when I think about the closest friends that I have made in the past several years, a lot of those friendships have had structure in the early days where, like, this is our thing. This is the thing we do together. And, you know, the friendships have gone on to kind of transcend that appointment or that activity. But I do think that being able to say, I want you on my calendar is powerful.
I mean, it's so telling, though, that so much of this, you know, like, flexing that muscle, I think especially for people in our age range, is always talked about in this romantic context. You know, it's like, you gotta put yourself out there. You just gotta download the apps. You gotta, you know, like, you gotta change your picture. You got, like, there's always a thing where people are telling you that if you were more proactive about it, a romantic partner will land in your lap. And somehow we've all really internalized that messaging. It's why it's quite literally a shorthand. And, you know, and I think that we need to bring that same energy to friendship. There, the thing that Anne was saying about friendships not being passive is so true. You know, we are, and I know that it comes easier to us. And so I don't take that for granted, but we are two people who plan things, and we plan them not, you know, like one of us is definitely an extrovert. The other one of us is just a control freak. You know, I'm like,
it's a good combo. It's a really good combo, like, for early friendship.
Right. You know, I'll let the people decide, like, who is who, but there is just, I just think that so much of being an adult is taking control of your own life, and life just does not happen to you. And that, you know, that's, like, quite literally a cliche that, you know, like, my parents told me all the time, but I think that it's really worth, it's worth, like, really investigating what that means, because I think that part of the, you know, part of the struggle about talking about friendship, and especially friendships between women, is just this idea that some people are in the in-group and some people are in the out-group, and everything just feels very high school, and we're all just agreeing to this weird social script that was written, like, I don't know, in, like, a, like, John Hughes movie, and this is how we're going to do life. And I think that it is just, it's simply not true. And I think that if anyone really looks deeply at other relationships that mean a lot to them, whether they are family relationships that they have or whether they are romantic relationships that they have, those did require some work, and they did require not being passive. And they, you know, like it requires you to be an active participant in something that you want to happen. And so it's nice to know. And to me, it's deeply comforting to know that, yes, you can bring that same like family, like marriage, baby, whatever energy to your friendship, and your friendship will be great for it.
Well, that feels like a really nice note to end on, to be perfectly honest. Yeah. I feel inspired to like text someone that I want to be friends with. So thank you for writing this amazing book. Thank you for hosting your amazing podcast. Thank you for being such wonderful people. Thank you for coming on this podcast. Yeah, this has been really, really, really great to talk to both of you. Where can our listeners find you?
You can find us and everything about Big Friendship at bigfriendship.com. And Kate and Dory, thank you so much for having us. We really are day one fans.
It's true.
The only reason I'm still on Facebook is because I'm in like 11 billion Forever 35 Facebook groups that are all very useful. Shout out to my ladies from the Child Free group.
Ooh,
You know, it's really nice. It's really nice to do this with you, two people who are very good friends and also podcasters.
I know, and modeling hard conversations for us, like, week in and week out, truly.
Oh, thank you.
Wow, y'all, that is so nice. That is a real... I keep chilling up in this interview.
I know, because, well, they were such inspirations to us, and it's just, like, really nice.
And remain so.
And remain so.
Yeah, really.
Well, thank you again.
Yeah, thank y'all so much. Get this book.
Get this book. Everyone needs this book.
It shouldn't be so hard or expensive to find furniture that exudes elegance, sophistication, and a touch of luxury. And we're happy to say that today's sponsor, Article, makes getting quality furniture as easy as checking the pieces out online. Thanks to their online-only model, they have some really great manageable prices. Article believes in delightful design for every home, so you can get to creating a space that truly reflects your personal style. I now have a space that is quite outfitted in Article. And I have to tell you how not just like seamless, but truly enjoyable the ordering and shipping process was. It was extremely fast. It's affordable, very convenient because I got to pick the delivery time and they sent me updates every step of the way. It was like they knew that I was an obsessive checker on shipping, and they were like, we see you, we honor you, and we're going to support that journey for you. As Dory knows, I have a beautiful bench from Article right when you enter my home. Gorgeous planters. And then my favorite, my kind of like surprise favorite piece from Article are the blankets I have gotten for my sofa that my family all hogs.
Oh.
Including my dogs. My dogs love these blankets so they're like throws on our couch. The dogs try to monopolize them.
Dogs are such blanket hogs.
They know a soft blanket when they see one, I gotta say. So their endorsement, honestly, their endorsement says more than mine ever could. That's how soft these blankets are. Article has all kind of curated furniture from mid-century modern or coastal to industrial, Scandi, boho. So no matter what style you're leaning toward, they have got something for you. And you could really do like every room in your house in a different kind of style if you wanted to. And with Article's team of designers, no matter what piece or how many, you're sure to find the perfect balance between style, quality, and price. Article is offering Forever 35 listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. To claim it, visit article.com/forever, and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That's article.com/forever for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I hope our conversation held up to our build up. We gave it a big build up before, but I think
we did.
I think
we were very excited.
Very excited. It was just so fun to talk to them. They're
well, and also like, oh, go ahead, Dory. Sorry,
well, I was just gonna say they're two of my pod heroes, and
that's what I was about to say.
Oh, well, look at that.
It's like I don't know why I'm screaming. They're like pod role models.
They are pod role models. Yes. So it was just really lovely to talk to them.
Yeah.
Anyway, Kate, talk to me about your intentions.
Okay. Well, last week I was really going to focus on my sleep, and then I had like the worst night of sleep after the first day of crying. I slept for like 4 hours from like 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. I kind of had like a come to Kate conversation with myself.
Ooh.
And I had to really kind of look at my habits that I have formed over the last few months of being at home all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm taking a break from playing our favorite game, Animal Crossing, on the Nintendo Switch.
Okay.
I think I'm developing carpal tunnel, which I actually think you mentioned that was happening to you as well.
Yes, I did.
And it was very hard for me to like play that game until 10:30 at night and then try to transition to going to bed. I just couldn't do it. Mm. So I'm giving that as taking a, that's on hiatus for me right now. And I gave myself a firm phone bedtime of 9 p.m.
Okay.
So
okay.
I'm trying to stick to that and just see how that goes this week and to really try to focus on getting some good rest, because that has really been a struggle for me in the last month. It's been really hard.
Yeah.
So I should say this week is just, my intention is kind of a follow-up. I'm doubling down on my sleep hygiene and I'm trying to be very strict with myself.
Great.
So how you were focusing on that last week, how did it go for you?
I was. My goal was to start my bedtime routine at 10. I've been decently good about this. I give myself a B minus. Although, as discussed, you and I have different scales.
I know.
Of what a B is. So like last night I watched TV in bed for the first time in a long time because I felt like I needed to get into bed by 10. And then I watched TV, I played a little Mahjong, and then lights were out by 11. As opposed to like watching TV in the living room till 10:30, 10:45, then starting my bedtime routine. You know what I mean? So like that
yes,
was like a shift. So I'm really making an effort to put my phone away, be in my bedroom by 10 o'clock. And like, I feel like I'm allowed to watch TV in bed, because that's not like getting on the internet or texting or, you know, but there was one night that I'm thinking about in the last few days where I just stayed up way too late. Like it was probably close to midnight when I finally fell asleep. But that like hour between 11 and 12, I feel like is crucial for me because I was like bone tired the next day. And I took a nap in Henry's playroom. Like Matt and I were both in the playroom with Henry. And I just like curled up on the little nugget couch. And I was like, I'm just going to close my eyes. And like next thing I know, I wake up. It's been like half an hour. So yeah. So I really am trying to make an effort. And that also means like putting away, if I'm playing Animal Crossing, putting that away earlier, which is hard. So this week I'm getting book edits back tomorrow from the editor that I'm working with before we submit it to my publishing house editor. So I am just going to be buckling down work-wise this week, and I'm thinking about taking my email off my phone.
Yes, do it. Do it.
So, yeah. I think that's going to
happen. I think that would be good for you.
I'm considering...
Oh, I support it.
I'm considering also putting up an auto reply, and this borders on, like... like annoying. So I don't know if I'm actually going to do it, but I'm considering putting up an auto reply that says, I'm on a book deadline. I'm checking my email once a day. So if I don't get back to you right away, that's why. Something to that effect. Because I feel like now I check my email constantly and I respond immediately most of the time. And I feel like people expect a quick response from me now. So I'm considering just being like, I check my email every day at, I don't know, I'm making this up, 9 a.m. And like, that's when I respond to emails. So I don't know. I might do that. Stay tuned.
I think you should do it. I think you should do it. I'll find out when I send you an email and you I get that reply and I will, be so proud.
You will. All right. Well, this episode was a journey. I just love that after doing this show with you for 2.5 years, we're still learning new things about each other.
Who knew you were a reality TV fan? I honestly am a little blown away. Like, do I really know you at all?
I don't know, Kate. Do you?
I think I do. Yeah, I think I do. But we're like, I feel like everything else I pretty much have a handle on.
I am going to send
but
you.
But that was a nice treat.
I'm going to send you an interview that I did with Jill Zarin for The Daily Beast in 2010. And you tell me if I'm a reality television fan.
Be my guest. Bring it on.
All right. Listen, Forever 35 is hosted and produced by me, Dori Shafrir, and you, Kate Spencer, and produced and edited by Sammy Junio, and Sam Reed is our project manager. And we will talk to you all on Friday.
We will, but can I just let our listeners know you have already texted me? You've already texted the article.
Yep.
It came through.
Right I'm efficient.
You truly, truly are A+. I give you an A+ on efficiency,
thank you,
Dori.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Sorry for that little addendum. We'll talk to you later.
Okay. Bye.